Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Amber and I are chatting with Dennis Crowley, the founder and CEO of Foursquare, about how the app has drastically changed. Plus, do you want to push for pizza? We'll tell y'all about that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 174, recorded Thursday, August 7th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I'm not in Toronto. I'm in Halifax, Nova Scotia, actually, Sarah. And I just arrived here, and my brother's getting married on Saturday. So
oh, my goodness. Well, that's a joyous occasion. Yeah, you mentioned that you were going to be there for your brother's wedding. I can't keep track of you, Amber. You are making the rounds of Canada.
I'm all over the place, and he's marrying Laura, who listens to The Social Hour all the time. So that's very exciting. So congratulations, Laura, if you're listening next week. You'll be married by that time.
Yes, congratulations. How does it feel? Laura's always not only tweeting, but sending us good emails for ideas, and really appreciate it. Keeps it in the family. Amber, she's obviously marrying into the right family.
I know. I was just going to say that. I'm so excited to have an official sister-in-law who is also a geek. So I can't find. She's actually a librarian totally into the social space and tech space. So I feel very fortunate that he has decided to marry her. So like, it should be a really fun wedding. And Halifax is a great city.
I've never been. I would like to go, along with all the other cities in Canada that I have never gone to.
One day.
Let's start off with some news. This is kind of big news coming out of Twitter. There's all sorts of rumors. What is Twitter going to do? Or are they going to start letting you buy products through the service? How would that look? How would that roll out? But something that the company is testing is the idea that you might see little almost snippets of tweets from people that you don't follow. Now, this is not the same as what Twitter already does, where it will suggest an account to follow, but it will actually be a tweet from somebody that, you know, a number of your friends are following, or Twitter, for whatever reason, thinks you might want to follow. Amber, what are your first thoughts on this?
Based even on this Mashable article that we have in our show notes, I don't think that people are going to react very well to this because, just all of a sudden, if you have a company, a technology company like this, who's messing with the people who you follow or what shows up in your newsfeed, people tend to get a little bit upset. And I think it's one of the things that maybe for Twitter, it makes sense. Well, like you mentioned, they're trying to revamp the way that they do a lot of things and look for more opportunities for advertisers. I think this is going to be something that's going to really irritate people, and I don't think it's going to go over well. And I have that feeling that Facebook users get, where often they get upset with how things are messed with in the user experience, and I think that's going to happen all over again here on Twitter.
We've already got in our chat room someone saying this is a horrible idea. Now, all right, so it seems a little pushy to put something in my Twitter feed from an account that I don't follow. Confusing. And possibly just annoying. And, you know, if I don't follow them, maybe it's for a reason. But I kind of understand what Twitter's doing here. You know, when Twitter suggests to me, and I use a third-party app, so I don't actually get account suggestions, but if I were to go to the web version of Twitter, you know, you see these accounts, for whatever reason, Twitter suggests, oh, you should follow, CNN, right? It's like, well, I don't know what the style of any of those tweets are going to be, or you should follow this person that is in the same industry. Well, I don't necessarily know is that person like a funny person? Are they only tweeting links? Or, you know, the tweeting style of somebody has a lot to do with whether or not I want to see what they have to say on a regular basis. So an account doesn't tell me very much except how many other people are following them. If you get a sense of, oh, this person just tweeted, that was a really helpful tweet, or, oh, I chuckled at that, that would be something that I would want to fave, you know, in the future, I can see where it helps with context And I think that Twitter, again, is going for the new people who are like, oh, you know, what's, how does this Twitter thing work? What's the style of voice that people have? All of that stuff. So for those of us who already use the service, it's kind of like, ugh, this is annoying and pushy. But I can see where it would kind of help people get going, because you get a better sense of, you know, the many Twitter styles that are out there.
Yeah, I mean, from a company perspective, I think you're bang on. I mean, I think it does make sense in terms of why they would want to do this. I just think they will get backlash from people. It just feels to me like there's a couple of things in the social media world that you just don't want to mess with as a company. One is what shows up in people's feeds or streams. And also when it has anything to do with privacy or security, obviously people get very upset. So I think that, you know, it's I just can't see it going over very well. And I think people will really get extremely upset about it. And where are they going to get upset about it? They're going to complain on Twitter. So it's
exactly. Yeah, right.
Twitter will be hearing a lot of complaints.
Right. The echo chamber just gets bigger. I don't know. With a third party app, I feel like we talk a lot about all of these changes that Twitter is making, and yet I don't really see any of them. But I don't know. I do find that, okay, so how do I find new accounts to follow? Well, maybe I meet somebody in real life. But often, it's because that tweet got retweeted by somebody that I do follow. And then I go, and often it's because, you know, somebody said something clever or whatever. But I'm sorry. And then you sort of investigate, well, where did that originating tweet come from? This person kind of seems interesting. Maybe I'll follow them. It's a little bit like that, really. It's more of like, it wasn't exactly retweeted. It's more of like this passive retweet type of a thing. I don't know. I'm going to try to be optimistic about it, but we'll see. We'll see how noisy it makes things, because nobody likes too much noise, especially on Twitter.
Yeah, I think we'll see quite a few complaints. But something we won't see people complaining about is this new messaging service or functionality from Pinterest. In fact, this has gotten really rave reviews all over the internet. And the basic idea behind this is that Pinterest has rolled out a messaging service so pinners can have conversations around shared pins. So let's say that you are in an office with a bunch of people and you're redesigning your logo. This is one of the examples they use in this TechCrunch article. You could get together and you could look at a bunch of different pins and share those pins and have conversations around them. And based on what I've seen from the overall design of this, it looks like they've really nailed it.
So this is, it's taking it a step further than, oh, let's have a conversation about whatever I just pinned in the comments. We can sort of take this offline and have a conversation that not anybody else is seeing.
Exactly. So, you know, what they say as well in this TechCrunch article is that pinners can have a conversation about certain things within the Pinterest environment without actually ever really leaving that environment, because they do have the option to have these private but group conversations around certain items. So think about it. We talked about Pinterest last week just in terms of people who are using Pinterest to either redesign their home or to plan a wedding. And that involves often a group of people. So the idea that the group messaging tool within Pinterest has gotten that much better and people are just absolutely loving it, it will just increase the happiness rate, I think, of Pinterest users. And we talked about that last week as well.
I think that this is, it makes perfect sense. Because, yeah, if you're using Pinterest as just kind of a scrapbooking adventure, well, that's one thing. But a lot of people use it for a specific purpose. Last year, I was trying to, you know, spruce up my apartment. And I had somebody who's an interior designer kind of giving me ideas. And she would pin stuff for me and on this board that she created for me. And then, you know, I'd go in and, you know, tell her, oh, I like that, or that's not really a color that I would do, or, you know, that sort of thing. But those were in the comments, which was, it worked fine, but maybe a little clunky. And maybe it's, you know, not for everybody's eyes type of a thing, even though it was not a private board. It was just kind of a conversation between us. Messaging would have, had it been available at the time, would have been just a perfect place for us to go back and forth a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it's funny, when I look at the design of this, it reminds me a little bit of Path, just the way that they have little icons that kind of pop up if you want to favorite something. I mean, it does seem a little Path-like. I don't know if you found that just from looking at
I think part of it just has to do with the fact that Pinterest and Path both have that red theme and that sort of cursive P. So they really do, in the app form anyway, they do remind me of each other. Even though they're obviously very different. But yeah, it does, all the messaging apps, they're kind of, you know, they're all doing the same thing. But again, within Pinterest, having a private conversation, or yeah, a group conversation, makes perfect sense because there's, you know, a lot to talk about. I mean, people on Pinterest, as we've discussed in the past on the show, they love it. They're happy.
They're very happy.
They want to spend more time there. So it's the next logical step, I think, for the company.
And it's interesting to see all these social networks where messaging has become such a core part of the overall experience. And this is where they're really placing their bets as far as having that edge, where if they are able to evolve a messaging service so it does have really enhanced functionality and features, I think they're feeling as though they can retain a user base more easily. So the idea that people are emailing themselves and just doing that anymore is totally lost with all these new services.
And, you know, I was having a conversation with a friend on Twitter this morning because she had tweeted something about, it was an article about how in the modern age of dating, to just text each other is very dangerous, you know, to kind of have this like on paper back and forth and people should be calling each other more, you know, and whatever happened to the phone call. And I was like, oh, no calls ever, never call me, because I'm just so used to messaging. It's not just texting, but within Facebook, within Path, now there's Pinterest. It's like there is a core messaging feature of everything now because we're all so used to it. Not saying that that's, you know, it's good or bad. It's just I'm so used to it that that's where I feel most comfortable. So that the idea of having this, you know, group conversation that isn't message based, as long if you're not all in the same room, of course, is like, well, how else would you do it?
Yeah. And I mean, I think people are feeling also more and more strapped for time, you know, these days where people are overwhelmed with all that they have to do. And messaging is just an easier way to be able to deal with stuff, whether you're meeting up in a group. And sometimes, I don't know if you have this experience, and I have a very good friend who I don't know if he'll be listening to this episode of the show, but he knows who he is. And he loves talking on the phone. And he always calls me. And I'm like, why are you calling me? You know I'm not going to answer the phone because I literally don't have 30 minutes necessarily to talk. And I don't know what that says about the state of friendships today, but messaging just becomes an easier way to deal with certain things.
Absolutely. Yeah. I get a phone call and I don't answer and then I text back, can't talk, what's up? Which is just like probably really annoying, but I don't know. That's just
I'll answer when my mom calls.
Right? Yeah. I mean, there are people I will answer to, but in general, I'm like, can we say this in a paragraph form?
Yes, exactly.
Whatever you need to say. All right, let's move on to some new feature from Gmail, making it easier to unsubscribe to newsletters or spam or all sorts of stuff that you don't want in your inbox. Gmail already made it fairly easy to unsubscribe. If I, for example, get an email newsletter and I mark it as spam, it must depend on some keywords or the header or whatever. Gmail sometimes will just, you know, put it in the spam folder, but sometimes it'll say, oh, and also unsubscribe, because there, maybe it can detect that there's an unsubscribe link in the email itself. So that's actually been... it's been possible already, but now they're putting the unsubscribe button just kind of front and center up along with your options to, you know, forward or reply or all of that good stuff. Do you find that you're unsubscribing from things on Gmail that often, Amber?
Yeah, I think I sign up for 2 months. So I'm kind of excited about this feature. We'll go over this one quickly because it looks like our guest is also on the line. We have a special guest this week. But yeah, I mean, just really quickly, Gmail hasn't made it easier for people to unsubscribe to things they don't want. I tend to subscribe to things. I forget that I do it. And even though I use a number of different tools to try to unsubscribe, I do like the idea that Gmail has really taken this and put it front and center. So I will probably take advantage of it quite a bit.
I'm signed up for so many newsletters, Amber, and I don't ever sign up for a newsletter. It's just one of these things where I always get opted in and then I have to opt out. It's like 30% of what I do in email is opting out of newsletters.
It's a lot
so
of work,
if it makes it that, you know, one keystroke easier, I'm in. I'm happy.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. All right. So we have a very special guest who's going to join us. And this fits perfectly within our news pack because there is a new Foursquare out. And we have the co-founder of Foursquare on the line, Dennis Crowley, who we've had on the show before. So very excited to have you on again. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Dennis.
Hey, what's up? How are you guys doing?
Very well. Thanks for being here, especially since I'm sure you've had a pretty busy few days.
I am so tired. I cannot wait to take a nap. Not today, but tomorrow.
Yes. Good. I hope you have a relaxing weekend. So, as Amber mentioned...
Foursquare sign, by the way. Isn't that kind of cool?
I love it. That's great.
Yeah, right? Live from Foursquare HQ.
This is probably one of the best Skype backgrounds I've seen.
I couldn't agree more. It's slick.
It's awesome.
Amazing.
So, Dennis, it's funny. Even though I knew that there was a new Foursquare out, as I opened up, because it's on my home screen on my iPhone, I opened up my app yesterday, as I do, and I was like, what the heck? What is that? What is that app? I have no idea. Oh, yeah, that's right, the new Foursquare. It just kind of changed magically in the background. So, you know, in a nutshell, Foursquare is now not only has a completely new design, color palette, the whole thing, but is really solely focused on discovering food. And then, of course, earlier this year, a couple months ago, you broke out the share and follow friends portion of what Foursquare used to be into a separate app called Swarm. How has that evolution gone? I know that there are some people who say two apps are confusing. Some of us, the, you know, of the old guard say, bring back the check-in. We want to be mayors. But what was the thinking of how Foursquare has evolved?
Yeah, so a couple things. So we kind of looked at the way that people talk to us about Foursquare, especially some of the newer users. And we're really excited about a lot of things we can do with local search. And local search is a huge opportunity. It's just begging to be reinvented and kind of, you know, rebuilt from scratch. But we were finding that we would talk to users and they would say, oh, I've heard of Foursquare, but, you know, I'm not into checking in. I don't want to, like, I don't want to use it anymore. And then we'd say, hey, but you can use it to search and discover awesome places. We have all this data. And they would say, oh, but we didn't even know we could search. I've never even seen Foursquare search pages. I was like, what are we doing wrong in that case? Other times we would meet users that love the search element, but they felt like they were doing it wrong. Like, I feel like I'm not using Foursquare correctly because I don't check into places. So I just stopped using it. And, you know, to be honest, this is not a dissimilar story from what we heard from our friends at Twitter way back in the day, where there was people that's like, hey, I don't want to tweet, so I'm not going to use Twitter. And we have kind of the same thing. Like, you don't have to check in to use Foursquare. And so we should really make a version of Foursquare that doesn't even require you or doesn't beg you to check in. And that was a lot of the thinking about taking the check-ins, taking the social behavior, the social sharing, the stuff that's a little bit polarizing, the stuff that had a little bit of a stigma. Let's move that to a separate app called Swarm, which frees up all the space in the world for us to do all this great stuff with Foursquare.
It's really interesting because, as you know, people in the online world can be very critical when technology companies go and they mess with what they're used to. But yeah. I just read an article on Mashable, I think it was this morning, from Pete Paschal, who was on the show last week, and a lot of really positive responses around the new Foursquare and what it will do for people. What do you think it is that has consumers so attracted to this?
In a positive way, I think, you know, as a local search tool, it's awesome. You know, it's like we've been using it in house for the last you know, for the last 6 months or so. We've been able to use it. We've been working on it for about 8 months. But like the hidden secret of Foursquare has been like, hey, we have the best local search results around. Like, you know, the tip content is really great. It's really fresh. You know, you see your friends' faces in the app because you get to know like who's been where and who's been leaving comments on what. And it's just like the ranking has been better than Yelp or Google for a lot of people. And people have known this for a long time. And I think what we've done is we put a lot of that stuff front and center. And then we combined it with everything we're doing with these taste profiles. Like, tell us the specific nouns, like the objects in these bars and restaurants and cafes and coffee shops that you love so much. And we will go out of our way to make sure that you can find those things. And I think that's kind of fun for people to do, to build these little profiles. And then, you know, you can actually see that stuff working in the app and you can see the results and the search results being customized based off that. And I think people really enjoy that so far.
You know, I've for a couple of years now, I've actually found that Foursquare is the most fun for me when I go to a new city or even maybe a city that I've been to before, but I'm not super familiar with. And not only can I kind of see my breadcrumb trail and say, oh, yeah, I liked that cafe. But it's really helpful when, yeah, I see three of my friends have been to this steakhouse in Paris. Well, it's probably pretty good. I might be more inclined to go there. I know that there's obviously comparisons that are made to Yelp all of the time because Yelp also is designed to do that. But Yelp is local businesses, right? What made you decide to focus specifically on food and drink?
It's just, you know, like our mission from the beginning has been drive people to amazing experiences. And it just so happens that majority of those experiences are at you know, bars, restaurants, shops, museums, touristy places. Like, they're not at plumbers and locksmiths and doctors and dentists. And, you know, so we focused on, like, let's just drive people to the having, you know, let's make an app that drives people to amazing experiences. And we think that people will want to use that all the time. The other piece of it is, like, you know, and I've talked about this for a long time since, you know, the Dodgeball days, my earlier startup, since the beginning of Foursquare. What was that?
What?
Do you hear that?
No. Or is that?
No. Oh, no, hold on. Something
you,
just happened in my browser where this.
No.
I was just saying aliens.
This Burger King commercial came on. I'm like, did you just throw an ad in the middle of I was talking about Foursquare? Like, is this a Burger King ad on?
I was like, I was just personalizing my Foursquare keywords and saying Pabst Blue Ribbon. Yes, exactly.
Well, here's an advice to future guests: is close your browser before so the ads don't
Good
kick
advice.
In. I was just saying, it's like, you know, the thing that we've been wanting to do for years is build this version of local search that doesn't require you to, like, open an app and use it to find great things. Like, we want people just to walk around and then to ping them about these amazing things. And, you know, we've been doing that since, like, 2011. We got better at it in 2012, got more efficient in 2013. And now I feel like we're really, really good at it, where if we know about the places that you've been to, if we know about the things that you like, as you're walking around, we can just, you know, help you find the best of these things, even if you don't have the phone in your hand. And that, I think, is really exciting.
What was the thought process behind the design, which is, I mean, it doesn't look like the old Foursquare at all. I mean, your logo is different. Everything's different. The colors are different. Why change it so dramatically?
Because the whole app is different, right? Like, if I sit next to a random person and I say, hey, I work at Foursquare, they say, oh, that thing where I check in and get badges and become the mayor of my coffee shop. And we're trying to get away from that. We're actively trying to get away from that. It's not what we've been about since 2009. And we're trying to, like, you know, rebrand and kind of redefine the company to folks. So we can do that with the product. We can do that with the story. You know, we should also be doing that with the brand in general, like what the brand looks like, what it feels like. You know, we designed that little F logo to kind of look like a superhero emblem. Like, we wanted people to feel like Foursquare gives you superpowers to go and explore the world. You know, so everything got updated just because it hasn't been refreshed in a long time.
Just to pick up on something you just said a couple of minutes ago about finding out where people are going in terms of their destinations and discovering new cities, I know some people are obviously probably concerned about the idea of their location service being turned on and security and privacy. Can you talk a little bit about how Foursquare protects people?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, the old Foursquare was very much about, hey, when you check into places, we share it with all of your friends. And that's a great use case, and people love doing that. But we moved that over to Swarm. And one of the reasons that we moved it out of the Foursquare app is because we wanted Foursquare to feel more, you know, to feel a little bit more private. Like, if we're going to know about places that your phone has been to, we don't want to share that with people. We want to use that just to inform our recommendations. So the new Foursquare has something built into it where we try to guess the places that you go to. And you'll see this if you ever open the app and hit the here tab, that's the second tab. With a lot of times we can figure out, like, oh, you happen to be inside the Olive Garden, you happen to be inside the Starbucks, you happen to be inside the Macy's. Like, we can guess the name of the place that you're in, and we can use some of that data to figure out, oh, well, these are the types of places that you go to. So let's get smarter about those places and see if we can recommend places to you in the future based upon where your phone has been. But we're doing that in such a way that, like, we don't want people to think that we're sharing that, because we're not sharing it externally. It's just for, like, Foursquare, so our algorithms get a little bit smarter about the things that you like and the places that you go.
So when I see these keywords for myself, where I can start to add taste for myself, is this based on where I've checked in before? So, for example, it's like, do you like breakfast food, Sarah? Well, the answer is yes. But, I mean, you're not just guessing. You've seen me check into a number of brunch places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might have seen in the onboarding process, we would say, hey, we're going to ask you to select some taste, and we're going to select those tastes based off your 200 check-ins and the 15 tips that you've left us. And then the next screen that you see it's like, oh, well, this is supposed to be representative of a lot of the places that you've been to. Like, we made sure to order them specifically like that.
I mean, margarita, happy hour, yeah. IPA, you do know.
If we're doing it right, you should select like 80% of the stuff you see on that first screen.
We should talk a little bit about, you know, I read a Wall Street Journal article yesterday that says Foursquare is now tracking users even when the app is closed. Ah, panic. Saw some tweets from people say, oh, this is really, you know, this is, you know, privacy issue. You got to opt out of it.
Yeah.
Am I crazy? This is not new. I mean, Foursquare must have known where I was when I was getting specials on my push notifications when I had Explore turned on.
Yeah, I mean, we've been...
Same old same, right?
Yeah, I was a little confused about the article. I think we talked to the reporter, and it seemed like a lot of the details were wrong. You know, we've been doing this since 2011. We launched a product called Radar in October of 2011, and Radar was using basic geofencing, running in the background to try to figure out where you are. And if you stop somewhere, we'll be like, hey, do you want to check in at this coffee shop? And we tried that, and it kind of worked, but it wasn't super accurate. And we worked on it in 2012 and 2013. And now in 2014, we're just like, this is one of the things that our company is really good at, is like, if a phone stops, understanding where it's been. And I feel like every time I get on stage or anytime I have the opportunity to tell this story, I'm like, I'm trying to make a version of Foursquare that you don't have to use, one that runs while it's in your pocket and it knows all the places that you go to. Like, I feel like we've been super, super transparent about this. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to a lot of folks. And I saw a bunch of tweets coming back to me saying like, oh yeah, we know you guys have been doing this forever. It's like, that's the point of the service. And to be honest, like, I think this is the way that local search evolves. Like, if you think about it, Amazon knows all the products you ever bought, and that's what they recommend to you. You know, Netflix knows all the stuff that you watch, and it recommends things to you. Spotify knows everything that you listen to, so it recommends things to you. It's just a natural progression that, like, for these things to evolve, like, local search will evolve to the point where it understands where you go and what you like to do, and it will recommend things to you. And I think the only reason you don't see other companies doing that is because it's really hard. And I think we're the first company that's gotten to the point where we could actually pull it off and make it work.
And also a huge business opportunity, right? I mean, this obviously changes the game in the sense that for local businesses, there's yet even more opportunity for them to get involved with Foursquare.
Yeah, local business has been a huge part of what's gotten us to this point. Like, we have 2 million businesses around the world that have claimed their place on Foursquare, and you know, they've run specials or they've they've left tips there, and like, there's all these tools that we can build for them that previously were based off of check-ins. And now they can be based off of visits. Like, did someone just show up at your place? So the fantasy use case I always talk about is, you know, I work down in Soho in the middle of New York City, and if a new sandwich shop opens 2 blocks away, that merchant should be able to buy an ad unit in Foursquare that's like, hey, this guy Dennis and 1,000 other people happen to live or work within this neighborhood. Let's run an ad and see if we can get him to come into our store. And then if Foursquare can be detected as being inside of his store, then, you know, we should be able to get paid for that as a, you know, standard like conversion metric. So that's a lot of the stuff that we're looking at. How do we use what we're doing to drive foot traffic to local merchants and to build an ad product that only causes them to pay us when we drive a customer into their store? Like, that's like the holy grail of local.
I wonder, Dennis, it's funny because, as you mentioned, there are the people who still say, oh, yeah, Foursquare is about check-in and memberships, and, oh, it's that app that launched at South by Southwest a few years ago. And that it must be really challenging not only to build a new product, realize that a new app needs to be built outside of this product, and still be able to communicate that, which, yeah, you know, as you mentioned, you've got articles that are written where you're like, I tried to communicate this and you're not getting it. You're focusing on the wrong thing, or your data is wrong in general. I think a lot of people say, well, you just change the app, whatever. How hard can it be? I mean, this is the several years long in process and continuing. How do you deal with that?
It's tough. I mean, like, I was, talking to an entrepreneur this morning about things. And I think when you start a company, you're so excited about the launch and you don't think like, hey, you're going to be in this thing for 5, 8, 10 years if it's really successful. And, you know, we're at like the halfway mark. Like, people always compare us to Twitter and Facebook, and they say, oh, well, you're not generating enough revenue, or you're not there yet. I'm like, it took those companies like 8 years to get there, and we're at year five, so give us a little bit more time. But I think the other part of it is that, you know, you constantly have to, you have to be really self-aware of where we are in the marketplace, and like, hey, what's working and what's not working? Like, we can talk all day long about having all these amazing social local search tools, but if people can't find them and they can't use them because the product's too complicated, like, we have to, you know, we have to beat ourselves up over that, and we have to make changes to the product so that, like, we can accomplish our goals. And that's what we've been trying to do over the last 8 months or so, which is why it's so fun to launch that app yesterday and be like, oh my God, people really appreciate it. They really get it. Like, they're really excited about it. Like, everyone here is super jazzed because this thing that we've been talking about for a while, I think other people can finally see what we're trying to do.
Excellent. Well, congratulations. We promised we'd keep you to about 15 minutes. I know you have an insanely busy day, and I agree with Sarah that your background is the best I think we've ever had in the show.
It's so great. It's awesome. I'm actually really digging it here. Yeah,
it looks good. You should do every interview like this. One last question, Dennis, before we let you go. What's the next feature set? You know, you probably have ideas where you say, okay, well, we don't want to overload people too much. Let's get them used to the new app first. But what's the next feature that you hope will be in the next version of Foursquare that doesn't exist now?
Yeah, actually, there's a lot of stuff we wanted to do for a long time is baked into this app. And I think we got to let this one go for like 6 months before we see what's working, what's not working. And that seems like a long time, but we're making all these little tweaks. Like, you know, search is front and center. We built this concept of expertise, so you can be an expert in something. We put the you know, all the taste profiles, the tips are front and center. There's a feed of all the tips. There's like five or six new toys in this app for all, like, for everyone at Foursquare to play with and iterate with over time. Like, I think the next big thing is just making sure that more users are getting high quality pings, and those are like the push notifications that we'll send you when you walk in or walk out of a place or walk in or walk out of a neighborhood. Like, that is the stuff that I'm like so deeply passionate about getting to work, and it works, but it's just we need 50 million people getting those pings on a regular basis, and that's what we're shooting for. And so it's all like incremental improvements. You know, the more crazy stuff that we dream up and just throw in there, it's just distracting and it confuses users. Like, we have to take the things that work really well and the things that are set up to work really well and just make those work better and better and better every single day. I think that's the recipe for success for us.
Well, congratulations so much on the launch of the new Foursquare app. Dennis Crowley, of course, CEO, founder of Foursquare, thanks so much for being with us on the Social Hour. It's been illuminating.
Thanks for having me on the show. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right, Amber, maybe before we get back to the rest of our news, take a quick break to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love Audible for a variety of reasons, not only because it helps you listen to books and periodicals and all sorts of good stuff, but it allows you to do other things at the same time. I was just talking with a friend over the weekend, and he said, do you have an Audible subscription? I would die without it. I don't even listen to music in my car anymore. I read books. You know, that's the beauty of Audible. Audible.com is by far the leading provider of audiobooks. They have over 150,000 titles, all downloadable. And this is all types of literature, and there's fiction, and maybe you're more of a nonfiction person. I know people usually are on one side or the other. I personally like fiction. I'm currently reading The Goldfinch, which is a great book by an author named Donna Tartt. For listeners and viewers of The Social Hour, Audible's got a little gift, a free audiobook, and that gives you a chance to try out the service. This is a great book, by the way, The Goldfinch. It's very trendy right now, but it's trendy for a reason. It's delightful. Amber, I don't know if you've gotten started on this yet.
But, I have not, but it's
a good read. Yeah, put it on the list. So that's an audiobook that I would certainly suggest that you might want to download. But it can be, you know, any audiobook of your choice. If you would like to download a free book, and by the way, that's yours free. It's you know, you sign up for an account, and you never have to give that book back because you've downloaded it. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. That's the URL to go to get that free book and check out Audible. Once you get hooked, you will be reading more than ever. I guarantee it. I mean, who's got the time to read books anymore? Some of us do, but still, Audible, it's a really fantastic way to become a reader again, and in a unique way. Listening to books is really fun. audiblepodcast.com/social hour. And thanks to Audible for sponsoring our show. All right, Amber, let's get into our social tip of the week. This is something that you came up with called Block Together. What is Block Together?
This is from Waxy Link. So Andy Bio, who's been on the show in the past, he curates this list. I always find really neat stuff there. This one is no exception. It's basically an API app that helps you cope with harassers and abusers on Twitter. The idea is that users of Block Together can share their list of blocked users with friends and can auto-block new users who @reply them. I thought about this, Sarah, because I had someone recently just send me a message saying, hey, how do I block someone who's been harassing me? And I know more and more this is an issue in social. So it looks like, at least with Twitter, there is in fact a tool out there that will help you work together to block certain harassers on that platform.
Well, nobody likes a harasser, that's for sure. I love a tool like this. And, you know, it's funny because, and maybe this just happens on Twitter, at least for me, but it used to be that, you know, somebody would kind of be bugging me and, you know, I'd say like, well, but maybe, you know, he watches the show or she, you know, is a fan of Twit and you don't want to do anything. And it's like, it took me a while to realize that the block hammer is just, you know, I can use it as liberally as I want. We should never, nobody should ever have to kind of like suffer through something that feels like abuse on the internet, period. And anything that is built as a tool to help curb that, I am 100% all for.
Yeah, it's a very cool little tool. Now, for our social media marketing spotlight of the week, this is something that has been going around the web for the past few days, a story that is getting a lot of attention. And this is about a hotel in New York. And basically what this hotel did is they had a policy on their website that said specifically that when wedding parties were staying at their hotel and having their reception there and writing bad reviews, they would be charged $500 for every bad review that one of the guests posts online. You can imagine the backlash, right? And this is in terms of posting bad reviews on Yelp specifically.
I mean, if you've got a contract for, you know, to, because I know enough about this to know that when an event is a wedding specifically, it's like a whole different ballgame than just throwing a party. And there's all sorts of, yeah, special things you have to do. And, you know, the event place probably wants to get more money out of you because they know it's a wedding and all that stuff. So, yeah, sure, you know, there's a contract. Okay. But that is the most unreasonable thing. I mean, it would be like an airline saying, well, actually, that has happened. You know, you can't say bad things about us or we're going to kick you off the plane or, you know, we're going to charge you twice for the ticket. I mean, I saw this story going around a couple of days ago and people just saying, well, I mean, the venue certainly got attention, not the attention that it wanted, obviously, but can you, that's crazy. I mean, yeah. Who thought this was a good idea?
I know. You know, it turns out that the hotel did come around and say that this was posted on their website. They kind of made mention that perhaps this should have been taken down, and it was sort of a tongue-in-cheek response. It wasn't to be taken too seriously. No one had ever, in fact, been charged that $500. But nonetheless, I mean, I think the travel industry is one of those industries that by now, surely you understand the implications of negative reviews and experiences from customers, and you should be kind of ahead of the curve because that industry has had enough experience and history with users from TripAdvisor to all the other services out there. We know that people talk, right?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to know. Okay, so let's say that... Yeah, you rent out a venue, and for whatever reason, you've signed something that says, I won't leave a bad review, and then you do. How does that, you know, I have a lot of options for how to talk trash about something online if I so desire. Who is the social media expert at, you know, this bed and breakfast or whatever it is that's going to track me down on one of the many places that I can say something? I mean, that's being pretty optimistic on their part.
Yeah, and it sounds very defensive, right? I mean, why would you want to stay there in the first place if they're that concerned about it? So I think it's another learning lesson in terms of a business figuring out that, okay, we have to kind of update our policies, be more transparent about them, and not have outdated policies like this. It just doesn't work anymore. Even if they didn't actually charge anyone with that $500, just the fact that they still continued to have it up on the website, I think just shows that they were a little slack with their digital marketing in the first place.
Yeah, it's defensive is a good way to put it. I mean, if you have a nice venue and everybody has a good time,
it's a problem.
You should be you should be confident about that. I mean, a restaurant. Imagine a restaurant saying, if you don't like your dinner and you tell somebody, then we're gonna charge you more, or leave us a bigger tip. It doesn't add up. But it sounds like they learned their lesson. Got a few emails this week. First one comes from Shell. And this is in response to us, speaking of talking trash, the Yo app. We really struck a nerve with this one, because, of course, Amber and I kind of brushed it aside as a very silly fad and kind of worthless. And why is anyone giving them money? Shell says, "Well, I agree that the app Yo itself is a fad. It is a proof of concept for a different approach to notification. Even the app itself is proving more useful than it might seem." Shell says Red Alert, which is a veteran Israeli app, lets you sign up to get a Yo when there is a rocket fired in the Gaza region. So obviously that's a hot topic right now. Shell says this kind of notification is what has people excited. The company behind Yo was taking meetings with companies that weren't interested in Yo itself, but just the way that it delivers notifications. One such possibility, notifying restaurant guests when their table's ready. You know, those expensive pager systems that restaurants invest in? Wouldn't it be a lot easier and cheaper to send the restaurant version of a Yo? Sending a Yo just because you want someone to get it did, as you might point out, get old very quickly. But the potential for the interface is actually pretty large. Well, I can see where Shell's coming from on this one, Amber.
Yeah, and I think we did have a conversation, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, where we did talk about the fact that there could be different applications for something like this. And we really finally got to the point throughout the social hour where we said that, okay, it's just because the app is called Yo. I mean, it's just the language that they're using to name the app.
Yeah.
And if it had been named anything else, I think, not anything, but most things, I think would have not necessarily have seemed so silly at the time. So totally agree with Shell. And it great email just to kind of remind us that the potential for the interface is quite large. And there are many uses for something like this. But I think just the naming of it and kind of the brand of it that came out front and center, it felt a little faddish.
It felt very silly. It felt like a OneNote type of a thing. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing the point here, but it's just a push notification from an app. I mean, a lot of apps do that. Yeah, Shell uses restaurants as an example. I would love to get a little push notification when my table's ready. You know, if I'm maybe wasting time at the bar next door because I had to wait an hour for a table. But I mean, what app is that inside? The restaurant's own app? I mean, I don't know. I would like to see this technology become really indispensable, but for now, it does seem like something that is just for fun, really. But
yeah, and I think we're going to have a Ratterfad today, just to tease that segment in a few minutes on the show, that does talk about the fact that a lot of people are listening to what's been happening with Yo and they're coming up with their own ideas. So just to tease Ratterfad, we have something coming up that is in the vein of Yo and is proving us wrong that there are other scenarios where this could be useful. And this one in particular, I might even be able to get behind.
Okay, sounds good. You know, Amber's a, she's a tough crowd when it comes to Ratterfad. One more email. This one comes from Russell, who is, this is in reference to last week's show. Russell says, "I listened to the podcast on the weekend, as usual." Thank you for doing that, by the way. "And couldn't help wonder why Amber thought that checking a LinkedIn profile of somebody that she was in a conference call with might have been seen as creepy. Some might think it's smart. Mind you, if you knew in advance you were going to be on a conference call, maybe it would have been smarter to check before the call. But the information is there for a reason. And if it can help constructively continue the discourse or develop new mutually beneficial avenues for collaboration," a lot of keywords there, "then why not check someone's profile? Just a thought." Well, now, Russell, I don't think that we were saying that checking a profile on LinkedIn is a bad idea. I do it all the time. It's that that person, if you don't have a pro account, can possibly see that you did that. So it's more of just kind of like a timing thing, I think, than a bad idea in general.
Yeah, and I think I probably, you know, I think he's bang on here that I probably made mention that I felt a little bit cautious about doing it because I thought that it looked like maybe I was stalking that person and it felt uncomfortable without me following up and doing something else. So a really great point. And I should mention, and I think I said this last week, that next week we do have a LinkedIn expert who's coming on the show. Chuck Hester, who is the host of LinkedIn Conversations, is going to be joining us. And I think he can help us through some of this, Sarah, in terms of the right protocol on LinkedIn. When you're looking at someone's profile and instead of just looking at it, probably the right step to take is to then send an email and say, hey, great having a call with you, just wanted to connect on LinkedIn, or what is that step you're supposed to take? So
right.
When it comes to LinkedIn, we're going to have an expert next week and a lot of questions for him, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And yes, please, all of you, if you have questions, do get them to us. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is how you can email us. Of course, you can tweet at Amber and I throughout the week. Those are probably your best bets as far as making sure that we bring you into the conversation that we're going to have. You can also leave us a voicemail. 2626-SOCIAL is the number, 2626, S-O-C-I-A-L. See what we did there? Yeah, it's a phone number. And of course, as Russell mentioned, you can watch us live. We do record the show live on Thursdays, noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time, right after Know How and before Programming 101, two wonderful shows. It's a good sandwich to have. But you can also watch and listen at your leisure, on demand. twit.tv/TSH is our website. Not only do we add links to everything that we talk about in the show, but this is where you can subscribe to the show, and then you just enjoy it whenever you feel like it. Russell says he likes to watch over the weekend, so that's great. All the subscription links to the audio or video version of our podcast is there. Try to make it as easy for you as possible to enjoy The Social Hour whenever and however you like. All right, Amber, you mentioned that it's an interesting rad or fad this week, and I'm excited about this one because I saw a lot of snark about it online.
I know. So this is an app. It's an iPhone app right now, iPhone only, and it's called Push for Pizza. And even in the article that I put in our show notes from Slate.com, they compared it to the popularity of the Yo app, you know, the idea that people just want to be able to press one button and then get something. In this case, it's pizza. So basically, the app lets you press a button. In fact, you have to press really, I think it's three buttons by the end of it, and you can immediately have pizza delivered to your home. It's that easy.
So this is something that, you know, it's easy to make fun of because it's like, you know, you think about pizza and this sort of thing is like, oh, you know, yeah, there's dudes hanging out. Let's get some pizza, man, you know. But I don't know. I kind of like it. I mean, it does one thing. If it does it well, I like pizza.
Yeah. I like it too. And I have to tell you, Sarah, I just had this experience. I was ordering pizza for maybe 12 people a few days ago, and I was using an app. And I literally gave up on the app because I was in there for, I don't know, 10 minutes trying to pick certain things, and the app wasn't working well. So I don't think it's so much that, you know, this app is revolutionary, but it simplifies the process because many of the pizza restaurants out there right now, they've complicated the ordering process for pizza. And at the end of the day, most often you're ordering pizza because you don't feel like cooking. You want something quick and easy. So the fact that I could push like a couple of buttons and order a cheese or pepperoni pizza and it would just come and I wouldn't have to go through all of the process that some of the other companies have, I think it's kind of rad. Make it easy. So maybe Yo has inspired other people to simplify things like this.
Right. This app does one thing only. I kind of love it. I mean, it's a little bit silly. I mean, do you really need an app for one specific type of cuisine? I mean, we just got finished talking to Dennis Crowley of Foursquare, who's like, they want to give you all of the data in the world that they've amassed about all of the things that you might want to eat and all of the places on earth. And then you've got Push for Pizza. However, if you eat a lot of pizza or you travel a lot and want to, I don't know, discover pizza that's, you know, nearby and affordable and all that stuff, I see nothing wrong with this. I see nothing wrong with it. It's an app that if you want it, you'll know, and then you can use it. And if not, you know, it's not hurting you.
Yeah, and I think there's a certain audience for this, right? And if you're in college and you want something super simple, then this will probably work pretty well with you. And it seems, based on what I've read, that this is the audience that they're looking for. And the people who created it are actually quite young as well. So they know their audience, and they know the whole process could be simplified. So I think it's kind of rad, and I feel like it should say inspired by Yo on it somewhere.
That was Lonely Sandwich in that little video for Push for Pizza. He's Lonely Sandwich on Twitter. He makes cameos in a lot of app videos. I just kind of some useless trivia that I am just talking out loud. I like it. I do like it. Amber, there's a conversation in chat of people sort of saying, you know, can't you just pick up the phone and order a pizza? I mean, whatever happened to all of that stuff?
You don't talk on the phone, Sarah. We just said that.
I know. It's like, talk on the phone. Over the weekend, I was with a friend, and we were down in L.A., and we didn't know it was around, and we wanted to eat lunch. And it was like, oh, well, there's this place. Let me just call them and see if they're open for lunch. And I was like, God, that would be the last thing that I would think of doing, even though that might be probably the most direct. I'm like, let me think of what app could tell me the quickest. I would probably have opened Foursquare and been like, let's just look at their hours on Sundays, and then I'll know, and then I don't have to call anybody. It's weird. I don't know what that says about me. I have avoidance issues, clearly.
I have done it so many times. Literally, I'll pick up the phone, I'll be like, wow, this is like magic. Someone actually answered when I called, and I got that information in 10 seconds.
Right. Yeah.
it's a bad sign, Sarah.
We've been in technology too long.
So I think that's part of it.
Yeah. It's like, let me find the most complicated solution for a very simple question, and then I'll tell you how great the app is. Push for Pizza. I say it's rad.
It's pretty rad.
It's pretty rad. All right. Well, we're ending on a very rad note, and now I'm hungry, and it's lunchtime, so this works out really well. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening to this episode of The Social Hour. If you're joining us after our interview, we had a great interview with the founder and CEO of Foursquare, Dennis Crowley, and he was, you know, he's a really honest guy. Kind of gave us a sense of what's been going on behind the scenes of Foursquare, and things have changed quite a bit for the company.
And if you didn't get a chance, if you're listening to the audio version, you have to check out the video version because he did have the coolest background of all time. He looked like he was going to be beamed up into some weird spaceship or something.
Exactly. Future Social Hour guests, take note. The bar has been set by Dennis Crowley. Think big or we won't have you on the show. No, just kidding. Just make sure your Skype works.
No pressure.
Make sure your connection's good. All right, everybody. Another Social Hour is done. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Evan MacArthur. We'll see you soon.